as financial advisors, what we often say is it can't be personalized to you if it's on the internet. It behooves you to talk to a financial advisor about your personal situation. So that's kind of my overarching theme with Google Advice.
Welcome to the Financial Commute, a weekly podcast that gives you the rundown on what's going on in the current market, how it affects you, and what you can do about it, all designed to fit into your commute. I'm your host, Chris Galeski, and each week I share the table with a knowledgeable guest, including Morton Wealth Advisors, fund managers, and investment analysts, to break down complex financial topics. Our goal is to provide you with the tools to help you navigate any market environment, leading to a path of more confident investing. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Financial Commute. I'm your host, Chris Galeski, joined by wealth advisor, Bo Weirich. Bo, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a special day. Happy birthday.
It is a special day. Best day of the year is what my friend Chris Galeski would say.
According to me, he likes to walk around the office giving fist bumps saying, hey, best day of the week.
Yeah.
It's fun to be inspirational, but happy birthday.
Thank you.
We're going to talk today a little bit about, you know, why Google advice is often wrong, or just internet social media advice can often be wrong.
Yeah.
People should take it with a grain of salt or lift under the hood and dive a little, you know, deeper as to whether or not that makes the most sense for them, right?
Yeah. And as financial advisors, what we often say is it can't be personalized to you if it's on the internet. It behooves you to talk to a financial advisor about your personal situation. So that's kind of my overarching theme with Google advice, but we'll dig into some details.
I think the challenge is that there is so much great advice out there, and the internet is an extremely powerful tool. So if you ask the question of, you know, how should I be saving for retirement, or how should I be investing for this, or what are your thoughts about that, you're just going to get flooded with information.
Exactly.
And now it's your job to kind of sift through all that information and figure out, you know, hey, is this something that I should or should not do? That can feel very overwhelming. So oftentimes, I guess the struggle that I have is people react differently. They say, that's too much work.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have a financial advisor, they go ask their friend and they say, hey, Bo, what should I do about Social Security? Social Security is one where, I think is interesting. Health savings accounts. The internet talks a lot about index universal life insurance. And then obviously, investing in real estate. So we're going to dive deeper in a number of those.
Yeah, I think those are the four main categories that friends will send you Instagram reels or an article and say, you know, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
So this is our answer to what do you think about this?
Yeah, look, let's start with health savings accounts. I actually love health savings accounts. I think a health savings account, if you're part of a high deductible health plan and you're eligible to participate in an HSA or health savings account, it is a beautiful thing because you get to put money in and get a tax deduction up front. You get to leave the money in the account and have it grow for many, many years tax-free. And then you can take it out and use it for qualified medical expenses tax-free as well. There are no accounts that I can think of that have all of those benefits and hit that trigger word that so many people like to touch on, which is taxes.
Yeah.
Minimize, reduce, eliminate taxes. Health savings accounts are extremely popular, but they're not right for everybody.
That's exactly right. And what you said is you have to have a high deductible health plan in order to qualify for an HSA. So what would be an instance when someone should choose or probably should choose a high deductible health plan in order to qualify for the HSA?
Look, I mean, when I was younger, I don't think I went to the doctor very often. I would take a couple of Advil and, you know, kind of go on my day. So knock on wood, I, you know, didn't have any broken bones, did not get very, you know, sick very often, did not have prescriptions, medications. I mean, literally, there were several years where I did not even spend a dollar out of pocket on medical costs. That's a great time to have a health savings account.
Right.
You know, you're not having to come out of pocket with these huge, you know, out of pocket deductibles each year. So that's an instance where a health savings account might be more attractive. Now, the challenge is, if I'm not making very much money and I'm not in that high of a tax bracket, do I really benefit? So I need to ask myself a couple questions. Number one, am I or is my family going to need to come out of pocket regularly throughout the year and anticipated medical costs to meet that annual deductible? And then do I need a tax deduction as well? the answer might be no to both of those, and it might be different than what your friend's doing, and that's okay.
Right. If you're in the 22% tax bracket, but you're spending $8,000 in medical costs that you wouldn't be spending if you had a lower deductible health plan, the money that you're saving on taxes is probably not offsetting the money that you're spending on health costs. And so that's something that we run into a little bit. But you're exactly right. Somebody has low health care costs, an HSA is probably more likely going to be a benefit to them. But then there's another situation with HSAs, that if people spend down the accounts, are they getting the full benefit out of it? They're not getting the triple tax benefit if they don't let it grow tax-free and then ultimately withdraw it tax-free. So speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, correct. Look, the benefit of investing is having time, right, on your side. And so if you can leave money in an account where it has time to grow, you're then spending earnings on medical costs that you might have later on in retirement as you get older. I think that's why, you know, a decision around should I contribute or is a health savings plan right for me? You know, there are a lot of factors that you need to take into consideration. Do I have young kids? Do I have medical needs? Am I able to set this money aside and let it grow long term? It's not as simple as, you know, just going to Dr. Yeah. Google.
Dr. Google doesn't know you.
All right.
So, Chris, I have a question for you. Should I take Social Security at 62 or 67 or 70?
God, I love that one. It really depends. I think that some people get emotional with Social Security, and Social Security is another one of those top Google advice things. I don't have a crystal ball. I actually am biased and don't think Social Security is just going to disappear one day. I just don't see anybody lasting through their political career by taking away grandma's, you know, paycheck.
Right.
But again, there's my bias. People oftentimes are like, do I take it right away? Because I'm worried about it going away. So, well, if you're 62 and you're still working, you might end up being paying more money back into Social Security because you've reached certain income limits to where, you know, you're not getting the benefit. You're still back to contributing. So you have to ask yourself a few questions like, do I need this money to live on? Am I still working? How long am I going to live? Am I trying to maximize Social Security, which is a completely different decision? And, you know, what does the benefit look like between, you know, taking it at 62 or 67 at full retirement age, or even delaying till age 70? Is my spouse involved? Do they get a benefit? What's the age gap there? Like, what am I trying to protect? It is not that simple of just saying, you know, should I take Social Security at this age? I was talking with another advisor the other day. Their client's almost age 68, and they were wondering, do I take Social Security today or do I wait till 70? This person actually doesn't need the money to live off of. They're going to be able to save it, invest it. They're fortunate. Mm. The break even between just taking it now versus delaying is around age 80-ish, almost age 81. So, you know, if they think that they're going to live beyond, call it age 80, they're better off waiting. But if they're taking the money now and investing it and growing it, call it at a, you know, 6% rate of return, that break even actually gets pushed out close to age 87. So it's not as simple of an answer. And I think that we've got ways to mathematically solve some questions. But, you know, philosophically, we should talk about, you know, what makes sense for you and not just go by what your friends are doing.
Yeah, great answer. We run into that question pretty often.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of factors that go into making the right decision, and having an advisor personalize your answers and give you all the data so that you can make a you know, well-educated decision. It's better than Google.
It can be. I mean, the biggest change with, you know, the internet or information has now kind of switched from Google to social media platforms.
Right.
I don't have any social media accounts, but I hear all the time on Instagram or Facebook or other stuff, people coming up with these, you know, magic bullets when it comes to saving and investing for retirement.
Yeah.
And it has to do with indexed universal life insurance.
Yeah, this is a
IUL policy.
This is a really popular theme on social media right now, and it's been rebranded in recent years to be called infinite banking, which is very empowering as a phrase. And there's a lot of really solid points to be made about this. And so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to disregard it. But the way that it's presented, in my experience, is people saying, this is what the wealthy do. The wealthy do this, and so you should do it, implying that this is how they got wealthy.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever talked to a wealthy person that's like, you know how I got wealthy? Indexed universal life insurance
policy. I've yet to come across one that built their wealth doing that.
Exactly.
I've met wealthy people that own a policy for whatever reasons, but never met anybody that says, this is how I made money.
And that's the problem with the communication. It says, you know, wealthy people use this. Well, wealthy people use that to protect their wealth. They use it for estate planning purposes. They use it for tax deferral, and they use it for lowering volatility. And so all of those things are really good uses. But the people who they're pitching it to are in the lower and middle income, bracket.
Right.
And it doesn't really work as well. So I'll see things like, instead of contributing to your 401k, if you put $300 per paycheck into an IUL policy, then this and this and this could happen.
Right.
And I think it's a little irresponsible. So just here's the 4 points of infinite banking. It's you take out an IUL, an Index Universal Life Insurance policy. Step number two is you build up a cash value. Step number three is you borrow against that cash value. And when you borrow against it, it's a tax-free
loan
that you don't need a credit check for, that you don't need to go to a bank for. It's you are the bank. That's why it's called infinite banking. And then step four is when you pass away, all of the death benefit and the remaining cash value goes to your beneficiaries tax-free, income tax-free. Sounds great. Well, step number two, build up cash value, takes a very long time. And that's the part that they kind of brush over. In order to put enough money into an IUL policy to the point where there is a cash value that you can borrow against, it's usually 5 or 10 years before it really accumulates that high. And that's the part that doesn't get communicated very much and frustrates me. Whereas if you just saved or invested that money, yes, it would be more tax inefficient, but the amount of money that you would have saved over 5 or 10 years would be vastly higher. And so that's what's not being communicated in that advice.
Right. I mean, oftentimes they're just pulling on people's, you know, heartstrings of like, hey, what annoys you or frustrates you the most? And oftentimes it's around taxes.
Yes.
Right. And
exactly.
I want to pay less and keep more. And so here I've got the magic trick for it. And I struggle with that sort of advice too. And just those blanket statements, because oftentimes those policies just don't work out the way that they originally were intended.
Yeah. And it also communicates like you have the power, you're your own bank. But when you borrow against these policies, you do pay interest on it. You pay yourself back, but it is reducing the remaining cash value by the interest owed. And you don't get to set the interest rate. And so you're not really being your own bank. And then also with a lot of these IUL policies, there's a cap on how much you can obtain in growth in a given year. And that's also not set by you. And that cap can decrease over time. Interest rates can increase over time. And so the math that gets presented to the customer might not end up being the math that they realize throughout the policy. So there's a lot more to be said, which is why talking to a financial advisor about it is usually a prudent idea.
We're gonna touch on the last topic, which is investing in real estate. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that Google advice for Social Security, health savings accounts, and getting thrown, you know, Instagram advice on why you should own an index universal life policy is stuff that everybody's seen or witnessed or knows somebody that has. But you know, as a company, we like to invest outside of traditional stocks and bonds. We love real estate and think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
But you know, this is a new fad. It's everybody should be investing in real estate. Here's how I built my wealth, and here's how you should too. Let's talk a little bit about why Google advice for investing in real estate might not make the most sense.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, because I do think that when I see real estate gurus on social media, they're way more accurate than other, I would say, more scammy posts that I see. You know, real estate is a way to build wealth. It's a way that a lot of people have built wealth. The problem that I see is when real estate gurus say something like, here's how I did it, and you should do the same thing. And the reason that frustrates me is because we're not in the same environment in real estate that we were 4 years ago,
right.
10 years ago, 15 years ago, 30 years ago. From 1982 to 2021, interest rates were in a really linear decline.
Yep.
And now interest rates are going up, but the prices of real estate have not come down commensurately. And that creates a really big problem. So I'll use an example. I saw a guru say, well, this is what I did. I took out a 3%, or I put down a 3% down payment on my first house. I lived there for 2 years. And after 2 years, I took out a HELOC and bought another house as a primary residence and rented out the first house. And that's what you should do too. And I thought about it. I said, if someone did that today, let's say the average house in America is $500,000.
It's actually $750,000.
In California, in the U.S. In the U.S. is $500,000. And so let's say it's $500,000. You put 3% down, $15,000, $485,000 mortgage. Mm. But then you have to pay PMI insurance. You have to pay property
private
taxes.
Private mortgage insurance.
Private mortgage insurance, property taxes, maintenance. Let's call all the each one of those 1% of the value of the home, just for easy math. So that's about $1,250 a month in costs before you even get to principal and interest. You buy that house with 3% down, you're paying about $4,500 a month. Can you then go rent out that house for more than $4,500 a month 2 years from now? Maybe, but average rent is more like $2,000
right.
in America. And so I just think that the world that that real estate guru built wealth in is not the current world that new coming investors are entering into. And that's what frustrates me.
And look, real estate investing, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, let's say you buy a $1 million home, you put down, you know, a 10% down payment, so $100,000. And now all of a sudden the value of that property grew by 10% in value. So it went from being worth $1 million to 1.1. You now went from $100,000 in equity to $200,000 in equity. You've doubled your investment in terms of a rate of return.
Exactly.
Leverage is why real estate is extremely powerful for growth, but leverage can also be the reason for destruction or why things didn't work out. And people need to be careful when investing in real estate on the leverage. How much do I borrow against it? What's the interest rate? Is it fixed or is it floating? Where's my protection in the event that something were to go wrong with this house or I struggle to find a renter? And so a lot of Google advice has been around the short-term rental phenomenon.
Yeah,
it's an interesting.
Making short-term decisions. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, in 2 years from now, interest rates are going to be down back into the 4 and 5 range. It's like, we don't know that.
Yeah.
And so taking that advice, you're taking on a lot of risk. Like you said, the leverage is what makes real estate the winner. But it can also be what kind of destroys the investment at the end of the day.
Well, and Google's going to tell you that real estate investors care about tax cap rates and all this different stuff. Trust me, if you're a value-add real estate professional, somebody that buys a building to then fix it up and turn around and sell it, they care a lot less about cap rates than they do their vision on what they can turn that property into. Cap rates are a part of the component, but it's not the sole one. So you've got to be careful. But we use Google a lot to help solve answers and identify information and kind of come back and go to clients. But, you know, thank you so much for talking with me today about a little bit about how Google advice can go wrong, especially as it relates to health savings account, Social Security, getting pitched an IUL or Index Universal Life Insurance, and even the challenges with investing in real estate, which is a very hot topic.
Yeah, super fun. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Thank you for joining us, and we hope this episode has provided you with a roadmap to feel more confident as an investor. To receive notifications about weekly episodes, email us at financialcommute@mortonwealth.com.